Hello, everyone. You have reached Green Room on Air. And this is Ray Renati, your host, and this is my podcast. How y'all doing? Did you have a good Easter? Today's Monday, the day after Easter. Did you get any chocolate? Did you see their Easter bunny sneaking around your house, hiding eggs? I hope you did, because the Easter bunny is up there with Santa Claus. Yeah, we had a good Easter with the fam. I got my Zero Electric Motorcycles hat on today. Ooh, it's kind of dirty. Now, I am not endorsing Zero Motorcycles. They don't give me a penny, but they're a hell of a lot of fun to drive, and I got to drive one because I signed up for a free public thing where you got to drive their motorcycles up in the mountains if you had a motorcycle license, which I do. It was a blast. We have a very, very special guest for you today. I would have to say that he's Mr. Musical Theater in Northern California. He's a Bay Area native. He spent a lot of time in Southern California up until a number of years ago when he came back here to run 42nd Street Moon as the executive artistic director. He has been involved with all of the regional musical theater companies in Southern California for many years, running some of them, conducting, acting, everything. And now he's up here with 42nd Street Moon, and we get to talk to him today. And his name is Daniel Thomas. And 42nd Street Moon has a wonderful new show coming up called Forever Plaid. Many of you have probably heard of it. It's a wonderful show with wonderful music, very uplifting and fun and funny, and it's well worth it. It's extremely popular. It's been done all over the country many, many, many times because it's just a great show. So we'll be talking about that with Daniel today. Now, if you like this show, you see that little, and you're listening on YouTube or watching on YouTube, smash that like button below. Helps with the algorithm. And also subscribe to my channel, please. I beg you. And if you're listening on a podcast, any of the platforms that we put this show to, which is all of them, subscribe. It'll really help us out. Now, just real quick, I am acting in a show at City Lights Theater Company in San Jose for the next 3 weekends. We've already had one weekend, or two. Has it been one or two? Two. I think we have 3 more weeks. City Lights Theater, you can just search on their website, City Lights Theater in San Jose. We've gotten 2 great reviews. The show is called King Liz. So I hope you come out and see the show. And now, folks, without any further ado, I bring you Mr. Daniel Thomas. All right. Well, thanks for coming on today, Daniel. I appreciate your time. I'm really, really excited to see Forever Plaid. I love that. I love that show. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Sure. It's in a lot of ways, it's a celebration of kind of the last hurrah of the great pop standards of the 40s and 50s. And it's got some incredible, amazing melodies and songs and sung with impeccable harmony by the Plaids. And it's the story of this singing group, these four friends who have been rehearsing in their garages and basements and getting these small gigs at their local stores and weddings and finally get the chance to do what they feel like is their first big gig. And on their way to that gig, they are struck by a school bus and killed. And then suddenly they find themselves back on Earth. They're not sure how or why, but they're being given the opportunity to go ahead and do that gig in the theater that night. And so it's the story of them finding themselves, giving the concert they never got to give. And over the course of that, you learn more about them. You learn more about what the power of friendship and family and music means to them. And it kind of gives them the opportunity to move beyond, as it were. So it's got a little hint of a spiritual or supernatural aspect to it, but really it's a story about friendship and love and the love of music.
Great. Now you're originally a Bay Area native, right?
Correct. Yes.
And then you spent a lot of time in Los Angeles. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I grew up in Los Gatos, and my family is all pretty much still there. I'm in San Jose now. But I got my degree in music composition at UC Santa Barbara. And while I was there, I mean, I started performing in theater when I was 8 years old. My elementary school had a wonderful program. So at an elementary school, we're doing the pajama game and Guys and Dolls and Annie Get Your Gun, which wow. is, you know, kind of ambitious for, you know, 8 to 12 year olds. But we had a wonderful time, and that opened up my love to musical theater, and basically did that alongside piano and singing and trumpet and French horn through high school. And as I said, I went to Santa Barbara for college, continued performing there. And at that time, kind of by coincidence, the theater I was performing at was looking for part-time box office work. I'm a poor college student, I need money. So I start working for them. 2 years later, I'm the box office manager. I realize now I have a career in arts administration as well. So I moved down to LA and I continued doing both. I was the general manager at Musical Theater West in Long Beach for about 14 years. Continued to perform, started music directing, doing the whole LA theater scene, and did that for quite a while, 17 years. And then when my wife and I realized we were going to have a child, we thought this is a good time to get out of LA because it's got its wonderful aspects to it. And I have a lot of dear friends and memories there, but it never really jived with me. So coming back to the Bay Area was a real blessing.
Yeah. Well, that's great. We're glad you're here. You must have been very busy down there.
Always.
Doing the administration and performing. Wow. That's a lot. But sounds like it's what you love, so it was fine.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate to have had the opportunity for my passion to also be my career. I mean, that's...
Yeah. Yeah, like most people, unfortunately, don't get that opportunity, I think. So that's great. Were your parents performers at all?
No.
What did they?
My mom was a pianist, and so I listened to her play and ended up, you know, being better than her. but she loved music. They both loved music. So I was around it a lot. But they never had any inclination, certainly not towards theater or anything. But they also were incredibly supportive and, you know, said, go after what you love. My mom said, find what you love to do, then find a way to make money at it.
Wow. That's fantastic. How rare. Mm-hmm. Especially in Silicon Valley, where everyone's like, are you crazy?
True.
You could make millions, just become a programmer. Mm-hmm. So Forever Plaid is a difficult show in a lot of ways, wouldn't you say, in terms of the music?
The music, it's a lot of part singing, a lot of harmony singing, and also in a style that is not native to people born after a certain date. Now there's a lot of people who come at it. When I was growing up, I did a lot of vocal jazz. I really gravitated towards that kind of music. So it felt like second nature to me, but it's a style of singing that doesn't occur in today's popular music. And so there's a little bit of a learning curve there. And it's also nonstop. The four of them are on stage, 87 out of the 90 minutes of the show. They go off and grab a prop and come back on, or they have 25 seconds off stage, but it's pretty much nonstop for them the entire show. So it's active. It's a lot of singing. So you're tired at the end of it, but it's a good tired.
Yeah. Now, did it help you, I know, because my experience with the show is that a lot of times music directors will record the parts for the people in the show, so that they can go home and work on their difficult harmonies that they have to sing with every song, I believe. I mean, every song has these four-part harmonies that, like you say, young people now probably have barely heard unless they find some oldies station on iHeartRadio or something. did you do that, or were they able to just get it in rehearsal?
I made some rehearsal tracks for them for some of the more difficult pieces, and we actually start rehearsal tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Oh, you haven't started? Okay.
Yeah. So we'll find out how much they've been working on that. But absolutely, we did actually get together last week for a practicing for a special event and did one of the numbers, and they already sounded great.
Oh yeah.
And yeah. I'm really excited to jump into the whole show with them. I think even trickier than the notes a lot of time is how many words there are.
Yeah.
Learning lyrics has always been a struggle for me. And some of these songs kind of, they're peppy and the words keep coming and coming. And
yeah. Yeah.
A lot of words.
Yeah, a lot of words. What is the style of music that you would call this? So just for people listening, maybe they don't know what we're referring to.
You know, it's what they used to call pop music. It's sort of a different feel from today. You know, most people would kind of consider it somewhere post big band sound in terms of the structure of the music and the composers involved and the melodies. You know, more recent analog, some of the a cappella groups, when you look at like a Rockapella or Evoctive, when they do some of their slower songs and some of their down-tempo stuff, have a little bit more of that sound. It's not as, and this is not, no shade to them, it's not as processed, it's not as studio trickery. You know, it's just really about these four voices coming together in a room live. Yeah. And if you go back a little further, you know, groups like the Manhattan Transfer in the 70s and 80s really helped, you know, give more people exposure to that music from the 40s and 50s. So it's kind of this pop jazz-ish sound.
Well, there are a few songs that people might recognize from the titles in the show.
Sure. I would say one of the Heart and Soul is in the show, and obviously it's something that anybody who sits down at a piano for 10 minutes gets taught how to play it. A lot of people don't realize it was actually a song with words.
Yeah.
And everything, and so we sing it and play it and maybe give somebody else the chance to play it as well, but that's spoiler alert for the show. 16 Tons, which I think is a, you know, well-known song from that era.
Tennessee Ernie Ford.
Uh-huh, exactly.
Yeah.
There's a couple of takes on some more popular song. There's a Beatles reference in there. Yeah. There's kind of what I'm trying to think of all the songs. Lady of Spain, which I think
in
Lady of Spain context nowadays is in the show. And then people of, you know, your boomers or maybe your early Gen X people will probably recognize some more of the titles like Three Coins in the Fountain, which was a well-known movie. Love's Many Splendid Thing, same thing there.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of tunes, and then there'll be a lot of songs that people may not know by name, but once they hear it, they'll go, "Oh yeah, that rings a bell with me somewhere."
Well, the songs in the show are just so upbeat and uplifting and happy, and make you'll walk out feeling elated.
Yeah,
I would say it's that kind of show. It's so much fun, and then also amazed at the abilities of the performers to do all of that, like you said. All those harmonies and thousands of words in an hour and a half or whatever it is. How long is the show, do you think? Is it?
It's 90 to 100 minutes. It's done in one act, no intermission. Yeah. So it's straight through, but it's a really nice length. I'm not a fan of the 3-hour mega musicals, you know, come back for part two tomorrow kind of thing. I like entertained and get on out.
I just went to a play though. I won't say what it was because I don't want to disparage anyone. Because the play was great, but it was like an hour and 50 minutes without an intermission. And you get to a certain age, you know, you need that intermission. I was like, man, I'm loving this, but boy. Yeah.
Got to warn you that before you sit down.
Yeah. If you're over 50, don't get a beer before the show.
In the lobby.
Yeah. And then you have Bright Star coming up after that, right? Mm-hmm. Is that the next show?
Yes.
What a wonderful musical that is.
Oh, it's beautiful. I adore that show. And it's a little off the beaten path for Moon in terms of the style of music. You know, it's Steve Martin, who continually proves himself to be a genius in so many aspects of entertainment. It's got this bluegrass infused score, real folksy and warm, and to tell this American folk tale and in such a almost immersive way. We're going to have some of the actors playing instruments on stage, really being part of kind of blurring the lines between the musicians and the actors. And
yes,
and I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I went to the audition for that. That was a lot of fun to get to play along. Mm-hmm. I saw a production of Bright Star on YouTube by a high school. This is a little bit of a sideline, but I just thought I'd tell you. Some high school in the Midwest. I can't remember exactly where it was. It was so good. These high school kids just blew my mind. Did you happen to see that one?
I did not.
No. Oh, it's on YouTube. It's just okay. It's just amazing if you have time. It's like I couldn't believe how incredible they were. But it's such a wonderful show. And so you're going to have Forever Plaid and then Bright Star. Now, Forever Plaid, I always thought the premise was so strange. Like, why did they write it so that these people died in a bus accident? I don't really get it. Have you figured that out? I could never figure it out.
You know what? It's a great question, and I don't. It was like, we need some sort of frame story. We don't want it to just be this review. We want some sort of line. And I would imagine Stuart Ross, who wrote the script to it, you know, woke up in a fever dream and said, they're going to die at the top of the show. My moment of genius.
Well, you have nowhere to go but up from there. So maybe that's it.
You hope so, yeah.
You start off on the worst foot and then you just move on up and you're in heaven, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think some of it is the sense when they talk in Bright Star and Forever Plaid and the two shows that we've done this season already, Mame and Falsettos, really the theme of the season is found family and creating relationships that are sometimes blood and sometimes not blood, creating those communities. And I think what this element of Forever Plaid does is put them in this nether region where they kind of are able to look back on their lives and say, our lives were cut short, but let's talk about what we did get to accomplish. And they realized by the end of the show, the goal wasn't to become famous and huge recording stars or anything like this. The goal was just to do what they loved. And one of them near the end, they said, we touched our dream.
I see.
And it kind of takes that moment, you know, the on your deathbed or past your deathbed in this case, to kind of look back in that, you know what, we did all right. And we had a great time along the way and we had these really good friendships and that's enough. It's a really sweet sentiment.
Yeah. It's hopeful. It's very hopeful. Yeah. Now, are you going to just have the piano or are there any other instruments
It's
playing?
Piano and bass, which is how it was originally.
Oh, okay. Moved, great.
Off Broadway in a small space, and I think it does kind of give that intimacy. I know they have a drum part available for it, and some productions use that, but I think it kind of starts to pull away from just the, you know, the practicing in your garage version of what the show should be.
Yeah. I would agree with that, and it's great to have the bass in there to add that dimension of rhythm and that extra tone underneath the piano. I love a bass. Who are you playing the piano in the show?
I'm not. Tim Fletcher, who is our music director for Mame, will be playing the piano for that. Wonderful. I have played the show before, but I'm happy to take a step back once opening night happens and just watch them do the magic.
Oh, great. But you are going to be accompanying during the rehearsal?
Yeah, I'll certainly for the first couple weeks.
And who's your bass player?
Kyle Wong.
Okay. He's good. Yeah, he's a stand-up. It's a stand-up bass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Great. Tell me about your cast.
Well, this is they're all people who've worked for Moon before, and mm-hmm. it's great to see such familiar faces coming back. So, Kevin Singer is playing Frankie, mm-hmm. the second tenor and kind of the self-styled lead of the group, and he is wonderful. They're all wonderful performers. I'm going to say that every time, so I'll just get past that. But he was our lead in Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, which is the last show we got to do before COVID shut everything down. In fact, we had to lose the last weekend of shows because of that. And that was a very vivid memory, being there on that Thursday night and doing the show and getting these reports in the city, San Francisco, going to close everything down. And we were suddenly like, oh, this is it. We're done.
Yeah.
And who knew
what? Right. Years. So sad when that happened for the theater community.
And Kevin was also in our concert production of Titanic. Mm-hmm. A lot of fun. And then Justin Lopez, who was also in Titanic for us, is playing Sparky, and Sparky's kind of the goofball cut up of the group. Which is a lot of fun because he gets some of the great solos, but he also gets this chance to be, not unhinged in a late 1950s sense, I guess. also a good way to say that. Matt Skinner, who just played Billy Crocker in Anything Goes for us last year, who was our young Scrooge last time we did Scrooge in Love, and I'll have a tie in there in a second. He's playing Smudge, who's the bass and kind of mm-hmm. the worry wart of the group. And then Edu Gonzalez Maldonado is playing Jinx, and Jinx is the top tenor, and he's the shy, nervous one, a little bit of stage fright going in. And he last appeared in A Grand Night for Singing, the Rodgers and Hammerstein review that we did a couple years ago. And he has the most pressure because that's the role that I played.
That's one of the cool things about the show too, is the way the book is written. All the characters have these very distinct, quirky personalities that mm-hmm. are very infectious and make the add another layer to the show. So it's not just jukebox sort of review thing.
Yeah, and you kind of see their little mini journeys and their character development.
Yeah, it's great. Now, 42nd Street Moon has gone through quite a few, sort of changed over the last, I don't know, 10 years or so. It used to be a company that did the forgotten musicals, if you will, right? And so that's changed to an extent, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting story because when I was still in L.A., some friends of mine, we were talking about producing some one night staged readings of shows that were kind of obscure and everything. And one of my dear friends, as we were brainstorming, he said, you know, the model that I want to do for this is what 42nd Street Moon in San Francisco does. Like, oh yeah, I'm familiar. I grew up there. And I had no idea that 10 years later I'd be end up running the place. But so I've always had a soft spot in my heart for those old shows. You know, we did the Gershwin's Pardon My English, and we did Irving Berlin's As Thousands Cheer. And we started that series, and it became very, very popular down in LA, and then got picked up by Musical Theater West and became a whole reading series that they ran for about 10 years. And when I came up here, or I came to Moon, and we talked about the mission and where it was and what the future would look like. And, you know, Greg McKellen, who one of the founders, was retiring.
Right. And,
you know, you had to take kind of a big picture look, because they had gone over the course of 20 something years from no sets, no costumes, holding their scripts in their hands, sitting in the chairs, just piano accompaniment. And it's slowly been growing and growing and growing. And by the time I came in, they were doing full sets and costumes and having three or four musicians in the band. And it was more like a fully produced show. And that's hard to sustain, unfortunately, in today's market, where title is a giant draw. And so, you can't just say we're going to do 50 million Frenchmen or you know, the Gay Divorcee or what have you, and expect that to sell enough over 3 weeks to cover the costs. And we said, well, let's try and mix it up a little bit. So let's hold on to some of these shows so we could do Sondheim Saturday Night, and we could reach a little bit into shows that had become more, you know, sort of New Girl in Town and Fiorillo and some of the shows that still fit into that. But then also find songs that celebrates the intimate space and the storytelling aspect of musical theater.
Yeah.
So we could find shows like The Pajama Game, which scaled down really lovely into our space, shows that are newer but kind of have that intimate feel, like Fun Home, or Falsettos, which we just did, that are more contemporary but still just feel good in the Gateway Theater. And finding that balance it's always tricky, but we want to keep that balance. And you say you celebrate the past, present, and future of musical theater. So hopefully that we can continue to do things and bring old shows to new life for our audiences while recognizing that there's another half century of great, great theater out there that we can do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's important to be realistic like that in this post-COVID era, because you need to bring people in if you want to stay viable. Mm-hmm. And as you said, titles make a difference. And the few shows that I did, like four shows there, and I saw the evolution. You know, like the first one I did, it really wasn't a set, and then the last couple full sets with different sets for each scene. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting to see the evolution. But then it ends up costing more, and you got to make sure you bring more people in. But yeah. I have to say, I do love it when the old musicals that I've never heard of come back, and then you find out how great some of these things were.
Yeah.
You know, like we did Nymph Errant.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most people never heard of it, but what an incredibly ridiculous, fun show that is, with music that people know.
Well, and that's especially with those, the Gershwin shows, the Cole Porter shows, the Irving shows. Every one of them has these, you know, two or three or four standards.
Yes.
Well, that's where that came from. like those people were good.
I know. Is, you know, it's just some of the reasons that some of these shows didn't make it were just bad luck or some financial thing or some sort of natural disaster that caused them to close or something. And you know, they might have been the next West Side. I don't know, not West Side Story, but you know, they might have been a bigger deal. But yeah, I was always amazed how Greg was able to do some, like Nymph Errant. I think he had to pull together like the script from different pieces of it that were existing all over the country in libraries and stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know how he did it, but
there are in our offices, I think, three full lateral files of all the scripts and scores that Moon has done. And if you go pull some of them out, and you can see like the copy paste, like,
yeah,
we pulled this in and here's a front of that kind of thing. I mean, that was a lot of work, and I know it was a labor of love for him.
Yeah, he loved it. Yeah. But I'm glad to see that you guys have evolved, and it's going to keep 42nd Street Moon going for a long, long time, I hope. It's a great theater company. I've always loved either performing there or watching shows there. It's always a highlight of my year in terms of going to theater. It's a great space too. You got
it's a wonderful space, and
yeah,
you know, we keep making incremental improvements where we can, and you know, the goal ultimately is to make it the best smallish, mediumish performing space in the city. I mean, audiences love being as close to the stage as they are. The actors like that connection with the audience. It's a good location.
Yeah.
Parking's not terrible.
Right. It's one of those older spaces where they put a lot of thought into acoustics and sight lines. And, you know, a lot of times the newer spaces, like, I feel like, did they forget to do that? Because you can, everything always sounds great. It's like an old movie theater, isn't it?
It was built as a movie theater.
Yeah, and every seat's good. You hear everything really well. People don't have to be mic'd. And there's a lot of seats, but it feels small. It's it's fantastic. Yeah. All right. Anything else that you'd like to share, Daniel?
I mean, I will say that Forever Plaid happens to be the show that I have worked on the most times in my life. I believe I counted this as the 13th time I've been working.
Oh my gosh.
Either an actor or music director or director, and it's just such an integral part of my theater career, and I'm just really pleased to have the opportunity to work on it again and share the incredible talent that we've got coming in and give our audiences a wonderful show.
Fantastic. And it runs from April 18th and through May 5th.
Yeah.
Coming up. All right. And you can go to the 42nd Street Moon website.
Yep, 42ndstreetmoon.org.
All right. And that's 42, right? 42nd.
42ndst.
Yeah. Just like it sounds. All right. Well, thanks for coming on. I appreciate your time. And
absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.